Asked before. First, just a note on ESRI. It has been in existence, as was mentioned, 43 years, I guess. And that was a good time, actually. It was a good time to get an HP, but it was also just a good time to live. Not that this isn't such a good time, also. We had a vision then, and it's pretty much consistent with our vision now, which is to advance this notion of GIS or geography or digital geography, as I'll refer to it, and evolve the geographic sciences with it, but have a focus on applications. And that's what actually allowed us to pay the bills and keep the doors open, was concentrating on what people needed and wanted. And we didn't really think of it quite that way in the beginning. We just started working for people, and that was, and they supported us developing engines and well, the rest is kind of history, so to speak. Geography, when I first became acquainted with it, was all about exploration. I'll call it just qualitative geography. There were great explorers that went here and there, and they took photos and they wrote about it. And even when we were getting started, that was the sort of mantra of what geographic science was all about. But these guys, some of who you'll know, like Dave Simonette and John Borchardt and Tobler and my favorite professor, Carl Steinitz and Duane Marble, started just fooling around with computational geometry as it's applied to geography, inventing projections. Waldo invented the first law of geography, which basically said that things that are closer together, closer near each other, were likely more related than things that were further apart, that sort of thing. And they tested these with algorithms and tools. They experimented with ways to model geographic things. And David Simonette, of course, early pioneer in remote sensing and trying to integrate it into that same space. And they were explorers too. They were exploring, though, relationships in space and time with new kinds of media. And they were also driven by not just their curiosity, but interest in applications of all of that. GIS kind of laid down on that, on those theories and those tools and that science, and became a kind of IT. It's a special kind of IT because it's about measuring and quantifying and a framework for analyzing things and modeling things, forecasting things. And it does open the world's eyes to new ways of thinking, certainly in the science domain. But it's also a way to bring our knowledge together for applications. And I'll talk a little bit about that. Our world has many of these problems to solve. Many of you are actively working on them in your own domains and in your own ways. And at the bottom line of it, it is all about understanding our planet and understanding what's going on and trying to address with system technology or measurements or information, bringing that information to everybody else so that they can apply it to specific solutions that address these issues. And that's how I make it up. You guys will make it up perhaps differently or some version of it, but contextually, that's the thing that in many ways unifies everybody here in this room, is a genuine interest to apply science and understanding to those problems. This instrument that I'm involved in is with GIS, in many ways grabs that vision and builds an underlying technology that is actually changing how people work. It starts by organizing things as measurements in geospatial space and setting it up in databases so that they can be accounted for, like forest change or carbon credits, or it's a kind of accounting system for geographic stuff. And then in that same digital environment allows us to analyze relationships and patterns between these various phenomena that we measure in time and space, and then visualize it, and then design on top of it a kind of plan or getting an idea or creating the future with it and deciding about things and then taking it to action. And that's, I have about 300,000 organizations that use these tools, and I get the chance to go in and look at what they do. Almost all of them do some version of this. They capture stuff, they analyze stuff, they visualize it, and they make a decision. And then they do it. That's whether it's a utility company or whether it's a forest company or whether it's a planning agency or a national environmental agency, they all follow this interesting little science-based pattern. And it's attractive because it brings systematic reasoning and thinking and measurements all into perspective and drives their actions. I like to think of it as a lot of little postage stamps on the planet. It isn't the big global model all at once. It's all these little actors. You know, Starbucks is doing it. You know, the city of LA is doing it. The city of Beijing is doing it. This forest agency, this oil company, they're all applying this little method. And it's not one big thing. It's just like the internet itself. And that's intriguing, because how can we capture all of that work and feed it with information or models or understanding that makes it come alive? That to me is challenging. I thought I'd just show you a few examples of what these people do. It's quite successful. They understand things better because they use it. They make better decisions because they use it. They can keep their records because they use it. And it starts on things as widespread as things like environmental change in the oceans. You guys do a lot of this. It's quite familiar, all the way down to very specific things where they're monitoring change on a coal mine. They're doing natural resource management, like managing forests or water, or virtually every oil company uses this technology to do exploration and managing what they do. And it's spreading into forest carbon management in Australia and Indonesia, Norway, Ghana. It helps farmers at the very specific level, but it also helps USDA get a picture of what's going on. It helps people find areas for renewable energy. It helps people manage land records, like your house, who owns it, the cadastral systems. It helps people do urban planning and urban design by synthesizing data and giving them guidance about where to locate or where not to locate. It helps public safety, like where are there crimes and where are there diseases and where are there social issues, where are there inequities, where is there public housing at risk because of one issue or the other, and it helps us understand the patterns of human health. It helps us manage utilities like Edison here or PG&E or Pepco, or these utilities all over the country use it for managing their assets but also making systematic plans. It helps transportation planners and people laying out transit and monitoring transit and like that. It helps our defense in this country and national security. Virtually every intel agency uses it as a way to visualize and analyze patterns of bad guys and then targets them. It's useful in planning and responding to natural disasters. Your work feeds so much of these things. Where are earthquakes? Where have they happened? Where will they happen? Where is deformation occurring? Can we use it for predicting something occurring? And then what do we do when it happens? It's being used in all the big Fortune 5,000 companies. They're using it to find where best to locate their stuff. Walgreens, Walmart, Target, these big box stores, all the way down to little mom and pop stores. They're trying to get the geographic advantage by bringing the data together and analyzing it in these quantitative ways. It's used for opening up government. If democracy is all about consensus building, supporting decision making, then maps are beginning to open up the way people make decisions, showing where we spent, for example, all the stimulus money was a big awakening for people. Wow, they're spending it here or there on this or that. And that's happening now all over the world. Maps providing a kind of visualization, awakening to what's going on in their government. These are some interesting maps, but what's behind these maps are information systems. And there are sometimes urban information systems, there are sometimes science information systems. These are a few examples that, for example, the Chinese are doing. They built a national GIS. This is quite shocking to me when I saw it. A national GIS which brings together all their information for their country, soils, geology, water, land. Did you know that? I didn't know it. I walked in there in November and just got the hell shocked out of me. This is like the Sputnik. How come these guys can have, it's quite upsetting. How come these guys can have a national GIS and we can't pull it together here in this country? We talk about a platform and collaboration. Of course, I wasn't that unhappy because they were using my software, but still, it was a little upsetting to me, no question about it. So not only are we looking at lots of applications, but GIS means information systems where you pour stuff into it and it shows up in applications in various forms. And these are not things you buy. They're things that you think through and you build, just like some of the systems that you guys build. You think it through from an information flow and what are the information products that are going to come out and how do I measure things so it all is in sync. These are more what you'd call transaction systems. Somebody updates a land record, the zoning map is automatically up to date. Somebody adds a street, the street cleaner's work patterns change. They wire it all up together, and we have thousands of those that integrate scientific information into workflow. That's the real big thing. So is this possible to scale up? This has always been a question, and certainly my experience in working in the NASA world it's always been these visionary view graphs or now PowerPoints that, we can build a whole worldwide system that measures everything. It's GIS and this and that, and bring it all together, and then we can really run a better show here for the world. Is it really possible to do that? Well, we can certainly in the early years, the 60s, there were a few thousand little scientists that played around and tried to invent things. In the 70s and 80s, there were really quite a community of GIS professionals that came into being, remote sensing and GIS. And now there's sort of millions of people that use it every day. Sometimes they don't even know they're using it. Can we scale that up to where we actually wire people's behavior so it's fed by an understanding of what's going on? That would be a really neat thing. We'll come back and see if we can answer that question. Today, many forces are converging. I'll try to build the case for enabling a geospatial society. What are they? Computing. Okay, yeah, that old HP, I couldn't afford it, so I didn't buy it. I had a mainframe computer that we rented at the university in the first years. Imagine that compared to, thousands of times faster machines on my cell phone today. And this is only 2011. Imagine it 5 years or 10 years out, or my God, 40 years, like I went through, watching that whole thing, and it's exponentiating. Ooh, gives me the chills. I mean, we've talked about nanoprocessors and all that stuff. That's going to happen, and for many of you in your career timeframes. And then measurement. We thought Landsat was really fantastic, and digitizing maps were fantastic. And today, we're moving to an era where virtually everything that changes is measured and made available through those same networks to pervasively to everyone. And what's happening with the software? Well, it's moved from trying to figure out how we model geography to now modeling time, space, stuff, modeling 3D, below the ground, above the ground, in the atmosphere and all of it, in not simply research projects, but databases that we can actually use and deploy pervasively. And that's affecting science. We're making advancements in understanding how it works. And you're huge contributors in that space. That's just moving along. And we now are opening up more open data and crowdsourcing. People are feeding this vision of a kind of collective geographic understanding. And I would assert that that's creating more consciousness and probably will scale up over time. Many professionals are building the footprints of knowledge, and they're increasingly sharing their data both as apps and with others as services. This little map on the right actually is done by David Maidman. It's a collection of a whole bunch of services about wells and stream measurement and climate stations, all harmonized into one intelligent map. I'll get back to that, what I mean by an intelligent map, in a minute. It's basically fed by multiple services dynamically. And a web framework is beginning to emerge. This is where many of these sensor networks or services are being fed into portals that are easy to access and mash up. And people are building these cool little web apps and mobile apps out of this infrastructure. Okay, it's early days, but I'm sure this is going to happen in big time. Still early days, but the architecture is already being implemented in cities and in states and in some federal agencies. Some Intel organizations saying, okay, let's wire up all the services like GeoInt services, ImageInt, HumanInt, SigInt, wire it together and feed it out to easy to use form. And by the way, social media is part of it, and real-time feeds are part of it. So people are looking at tweets spatially or looking at all kinds of measurements in real time. They're part of it. They're part of that same framework. We don't know exactly how to deal with these yet, but we're learning how we deal with crowdsourced mapping. I'm from the authoritative source world. I know better than those guys out there making these maps. Well, they're doing, who can argue with several billion observations going on every day, feeding into something, as opposed to systematic, old time, a few dozen people making the maps. It's going to catch up, right? Is it useful for everything? No, but it's one of the feeds, just like you guys think of sensor feeds. There's human sensor feeds crowdsourced in as different layers, and we'll use that. Has to be managed. Can't be just junk on top of a Google map. No, it has to be transactions that go into a database that can be exploited and looked at and used and QA'd, QC'd, and all that stuff. But that's nicely coming. One of the mediums for bringing this all together is what I'm starting to call intelligent maps or intelligent web maps. Intelligent web maps are basically taking multiple services, maps, images, real-time feeds, and models, model services, which might be linking several of these together into an analytic interpretation, and mashing them up. I don't like the term mashing up, but it's pretty descriptive, into an intelligent map that in turn can be published, made available, and used by somebody else to make even a more intelligent map. This is an interesting medium, because I can visualize these maps, I can pan and zoom on them, I can edit them, and when I edit them, they may go back and edit one of these feeds. I can do pop-ups, which give me real-time information about it. I can do analytics like spread models or time-distance models on an intelligent map. I can integrate time, so I can slide around and see stuff over time. I'll come back to this a few times, but this notion of taking all the complexity, you know what I mean by complexity? Of GIS, all the measurements, all the models, and expressing it as just a little map is really nice. Because I can put that little map into anything. I can put it in my cell phone, I can write on it, I can email it to my friend, I can put it in a website. So I have a new medium called an intelligent web map. This is a big thing. Doesn't sound like it, but it's a very big thing to expose and make simple all the complexity underneath it. In human terms, because everybody can see a map, they can look at a map, they can share a map, they can draw on a map. We're all sort of brought up as kids to, oh yeah, a map, I can understand a map. Well, what the hell do we have all this complexity about measuring little models? No, if I want to communicate with real normal people, just do it in a map. It's a language. We forgot about that. So anyway, I'm reinventing mapping, as you can see. These trends, those big trends and these very simple trends, are going to change how we work. I'm talking about society changing how society really works. More integrative approaches, where we consider all the factors. More collaboration that cloud computing and geographic information the cloud gives us. More real time, because these feeds are coming in and I'm seeing them in my intelligent maps. You know, my common operating picture intelligent map. I don't have one of these big boards and one of these big screens with that cost a gazillion dollars. No, I've got my common operating picture as an intelligent map, and I can email it to people, and I can also have it on one of those screens, but cops will be everywhere, real-time geography. And we'll become more transparent, and we'll also learn how to develop common or shared infrastructure. Why do we have 5 different copies of digital streets? Why do we have 237 copies of the Landsat data for? Why do we have multiple copies when we could have one integrated infrastructure environment with services that blow it out for everybody to be able to use anywhere, anytime? That's the concept of the cloud, and I'll show you some examples where that's starting to emerge. My work is about developing these sorts of platforms that this stuff can live inside of. And we got lots of efforts going on, lots of little research projects. I have hundreds of developers and researchers that work on this. Their research is primarily trying to figure out how to take concepts and make it into a practical COTS platform. And those of you in NASA now have licensed this pervasively, so it's a kind of enterprise license. I encourage you to play with it and work with it. Some of these research projects have been driven by our collaboration here with JPL, and I really want to acknowledge people from there. It's been wonderful to work with you and collaborate, and it's absolutely affected our core tools and being able to read multiple sensors in the data models and then visualize it and work with it. But we're just still beginning. Part of what we've tried to do here is establish a working user group, a kind of collaboration. I'd like to invite any or all of you to participate in that. We've had a couple of meetings so far. We're going to have another one at our big users conference this summer in San Diego. It's a sub meeting. There'll be about 14,000 people there. This will be maybe a couple hundred, Sheila, that'll come together around the application of remote sensing within the context of these GIS users. And that's, you know, it's yet to be invented. I've been going to NASA meetings and on boards and so forth my whole life, it seems like, but we've never really bridged the gap so well. Now I can feel it, because these GIS systems can now actually manage imagery and use them and ingest them. But the applications of that are just beginning to be felt and understood. And we have to drive it so that it co-evolves with the application domain. It isn't just about measurement and pictures. It's about how we drive the application users to get it and pull it and move it along. And so I encourage you to think about that. There are hundreds of improvements that are being made. Integrating time, as I mentioned, being able to have very fast web maps in GIS, not just a kind of a Google or Microsoft consumer map, but I'm talking about data-driven maps that are fast and elegant like this. More 3D, more integration of scientific programming languages like Python that drive it, more advanced spatial analytics, spatial autocorrelation, the ability to do proximity analysis, Krieging, those sorts of things. Well, this is how I look at the world, that there are 4 basic platforms that support GIS. There's desktops. There's millions of those. People actually hit the keyboards every day creating knowledge. They create maps. They create models which combine these maps. They create beautiful cartography. And a lot of it is just one shot at a time. It's just a project. Somebody comes in, I need a map for such and such. Would you bring the data together? And, you know, that goes on every day. The second big pattern is the server pattern, where people stand up a GIS server and they serve out the core information, sometimes authored in a desktop, out to a lot of people. And those are the foundation for information systems, transactional, like land records management or land use zoning. People come in and they're updating and using the data. The third pattern, which is pretty significant in bigger cities and federal agencies and state agencies, is this notion of a federated pattern, where you have multiple servers. They may be different image servers or GIS servers or science servers or money servers or people servers, and you orchestrate them around a bus or around a network. And then you build cool applications which bring together different services. And they're information systems, really. FedEx is a big one. Sears is a big one. This is done a lot in the intel agencies, where they're bringing multiple sensors together for this idea of geospatial fusion, seeing the common operating picture. These are what I'd like to call enterprise systems, and they're alive and well and growing, very prosperous. And then there's this new world that's still emerging. It's the web cloud world, where the contents of this somehow get put out there and are easy to discover and easy to find and easy to use. And that seems like a big jump, a very different architecture, but this can actually be connected to this quite nicely. These desktops can be users and contributors, so can mobile phones and so can web browsers, actually. And these servers can be wired up sort of like this enterprise system, but instead of using SOAP, we're using web services and REST and different sorts of standards for making it happen. And in the center is a portal where everything is referenced. So maps are referenced, data is referenced, models are referenced, and web maps are referenced. Those are maps made out of other maps, or these sort of intelligent maps. So I make one, I store it there. It's not really data, but it's just a kind of pointer to the core services where it's happening. That's sort of exploding as an environment. So what we've been working on at Esri is changing our pattern so that instead of just building desktops or just building enterprise servers, we'd build desktops that were connected into an ecosystem. We'd build mobile devices which were connected into an ecosystem, and we'd build web viewers, clients, that would be connected into an ecosystem of servers and cloud environments. So it used to be I'd buy Arc Info, and then I'd have to have a server, or I'd just run it alone. Now I buy a technology and it connects in with tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of resources that are available in different enterprise systems or cloud systems. And when I take some data, I can send it over to my enterprise cloud thing. It spins up a service and feeds it back to any other device. So just like Apple, you know, I have one of those iPhones. I don't have it with me, but maybe I do. No, I don't. If you get one, it's not just telephones. You buy into an email service, and you buy into music, and you buy into all kinds of apps. So the client, people are less interested in the client, and they're more interested in the content and what you can do with it in these apps. So we're basically started last year to transform everything we did into this sort of space. So it's no longer the devices, it's the system. And it allows you to discover and create and manage and visualize and analyze and collaborate. In other words, it's about capability. It's not about software and tools anymore. And as I mentioned, the intelligent maps are a key part of that because they're the medium of that environment. I can email you my intelligent map and it comes alive in your iPhone. And you can communicate stories. Here's a story about global climate change. You can move it back and forth. It's so intuitive. I don't need any explanation. It's GIS without software. That's the idea. It's GIS without software. Oh, there's software running in the cloud up there, but I don't want to have to worry about it. I don't want to worry about it. It's science without having to own the tool. It's like a user interface that opens up the work of other people who have done the science. These web maps can run on anything. You stand them up as services. You can get them in a browser. You can look at them in an iPhone or an Android phone or a mobile phone or a Microsoft phone or a desktop. It doesn't really matter. You can send them around. They're, in other words, independent of the device. That's part of what the web and REST standards provide. And imagery and remote sensing are part of it. So lest you think this is about maps in the traditional sense, no. These web maps can be pan and zoom imagery where massive amounts of imagery are plugged in, processed dynamically in the cloud, and viewed continuously as imagery. Imagery can be stored and viewed for analysis dynamically with thicker clients, of course. Different game here. Kind of fun. So this is a little website that we put together a few months ago called Change Matters. This was done by Cass Green and Lori Jordan and some of my colleagues. We basically loaded the five epochs of Landsat, we're not finished with 2010, for the whole world into a cloud environment. And what you can do is go here, and there's kind of a funny front end, but it's evolving. It's called Change Matters. You can just type it in and get at it. And it'll stand up, and you can look at Landsat data for all these 35 years. You can look at, say, natural vegetation, and it processes it on the fly. It'll look at color infrared on the fly views of a multi-spectral continuous database. And if I zoom on in, I can say, well, let's take a look at time here on the right and with a slider bar, say, what did it look like back there in 1975 in northwest Las Vegas? And then move it across and say, well, let's look at the change. There's the change. So it's all done dynamically in the cloud, not pre-cooked. So what I'm trying to get across here is the idea I can take raw measurements instead of having to geo-reference them and pre-process them into tiles and then get them ready. No, I just pour in my raw data. This is a three-view picture in a browser of the same database, 75, 2000, and the difference. So I can look at all three at the same time, pan and zoom, and say, what is the difference? That may not be very snazzy for you guys, but I'll tell you, for land use planners or normal human beings, they get all excited about this. And because it puts in their hands practical tools to look at change over time. So this is the broader Las Vegas. This is what I was talking about, a smart map that you can look at through time. It has a little slider bar there. Just a composition of a map, just like map makers have been doing, but it's a temporal map. And if you think this is just about Las Vegas, I'll just zoom out and show you. This is all of Landsat for the whole world being dynamically processed in real time. No pre-processing, raw imagery. So as I pan and zoom around, it's just a cloud thing, and there are thousands and thousands of guys hitting this at the same time, right? So this scales. So the whole metaphor of process and use goes away. You just take your raw data in and use these massive, and are they going to get faster and more scalable? Yes! Remember that? It's growing. So this is zooming into Mount Kilimanjaro. This is the 75, 90 pictures of Kilimanjaro, 2000, and then I think we slided up here to 2005. This was very, very exciting to congressmen who could zoom into their district and see how their district has changed. And normal people, they like to see how things are changing. But we haven't done a very good job of that sort of simple delivery of science to normal people. The way this works is I take any kind of image, and I'm talking about any source, any format, multi-spectral, multi-temporal, multi-resolution, put it into the cloud, and I can serve it right into a user where processing is done on the cloud. In the cloud on the fly. Or alternatively, I can run my traditional cloud-based, in this case, processing tools to do color balancing, mosaicing, you know, seam line adjustment, all of that stuff in using the 64-bit cloud computational multiprocessor VM stuff and create tiles. Tiles, why tiles? Because these are extraordinarily fast as opposed to the stuff that I was showing you with Landsat, although that's not quite so slow either. It's pretty fast. And deliver it to users. Users? Yeah, people who actually want to make a decision or do something, you know, little by little. This is kind of like a dream for things. I mean, we used to talk about EOS disk, remember that? We put it all up there and then download it, and then workstation and 473 scientists around the different university networks would use it. No, we're talking about now near real time, not real time, bringing in raw imagery and serving it out with new views as the imagery is coming in. And that's not a dream. This is not a PowerPoint thing. This is actually all real. With COTS technology that, for example, NASA has already licensed. Okay, what's the next big step? This is a project called ArcGIS Online. We've been working on it for about 11 months. This is a way to register thousands and thousands and thousands of these data sets and services into a little portal where free viewer software or more expensive desktop software can discover it, find it, and use it. So in this cloud is also base maps for the world, thanks to GeoEye and a few other vendors, imagery for the world in a continuous Google-like picture, but now from authoritative source, nicely cleaned up. Little viewing tools, maps and apps, so I can download an app and make it come alive. Viewers, open APIs, and the ability to do mashups. And if I, in about 6 weeks, if I have a desktop tool, I right-click it, I can send my map or my image up there and it'll host it automatically. That's not free. I can't afford to pay Amazon what everybody would do, so they'll have to pay Amazon some clicks and storage fees, but the concept is very clear, that no longer will I have to buy my own server or host my stuff locally. I can send up to 100 gigs across the internet, store it up there, turn it into a service automatically, and do everything I was just showing you. Or if I want to shovel more in, send me a hard drive and I'll put it up there and run it in the Amazon thing. So this dream that Jason actually first came to me about, of we need to get remote sensing data available to everybody pervasively, I thought, okay, that's a little too early. Now it's coming alive this summer. So it's pretty exciting. And what that means is that the work that science people and planning people and actually all the GIS people do can be either linked through servers to this portal, or some of it actually just put up into the hosting environment of that portal and made available as authored web maps for everybody else to use. So right now, GIS community is characterized by hundreds of thousands of people who, if you need a map, you go to them and they make the map for you. And, you know, that's they got full-time job because people like a lot of maps. They're really very, very busy. But this new environment says it's kind of like help yourself, do-it-yourself GIS, where the services are registered, the intelligent maps are registered, and I can sit there in a browser and combine them with images or whatever I want to do with them, or grab somebody's model, associate it with an intelligent map, and run the model from the map myself. That requires people to author the services, and that's always been a little hard because they had to buy a server or start up a server or administrate a server. That was even more difficult. Now they can just send it over to the cloud. So my feeling is that this is going to change things. It's a game changer. In my career, these 40 years of playing around with this stuff, this is a big one. It'll, you know, when we had it on the mainframe, a few thousand people worked. When we had it in the mini computer, a few tens of thousands. When we had it on the workstation, maybe 100,000. When we had it on the desktop, a few million people. Services helped tell one person's story to everybody else. But now we're not talking about that. We're talking about feeds into these portals where they can be, data can be easily discovered, combined, republished, put into a blog, put into a website, emailed to somebody else, put into social networking environments, et cetera. So what am I trying to tell you? I think that the future will be strong. You're in the right business. Your field will flourish, driven by the kind of problems that we are facing. And the platforms of linking the pieces together, they're all coming together too. And I think that we don't know yet how they're going to affect us spiritually or in our behavior. We don't really know. But I do know that people are rational, most of them, most of the time, some of the time. And I think that given this language, given these new understandings, publishing your science and systems in new ways will affect them. Will it affect in time to create the huge changes that we have to make in our own human behavior? Some of you will find out. I will probably be gone. But it's interesting. It's certainly the only shot I think we've got. If we don't wire it up this way, if we don't really take it seriously, if we stay in our own little niches of science or investigation and measurement and modeling, I don't think we have a shot. Because all the trends are going the wrong way. But I also am very positive that the human spirit will make it all come together. And it'll create this kind of a geospatial consciousness that we dream about. Well, thank you very much for inviting me here. You're a great group. Thank you.